latest episode of the Big Sky Boneheads podcast. Thank you so much for taking some time. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever it is that you found it. It's available on all of the platforms. My name is Michael Gray. His name is Scott Hershey. We are joined by a man who works exclusively in the fun department. Max Pigman, the owner of Lewis and Clark Brewing, the site for the 2024 Montana State Beer Awards this year, and a guy who is has grown an absolute monster of a business here in Helena. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me this morning, guys.
I can't believe you have the time to come in. I mean, you've got a lot of irons in the fire at all times.
Yeah, but you know, you can always squeeze out an hour or two when needed. So no, this is a pleasure. It's always great to tell the story a little bit and chat with you guys.
What time of day you get out of bed?
I'm a late nighter, so I'm usually in the hot tub between about 1 and 2:30. So I'm usually in bed by 3, and then I usually get out of bed about 8 to 8:30.
I like
it. And it's go in between.
I like everything about that sentence, man.
If it's on the weekend, I've been known to sleep till 10 or 10:30. Little catch-up day every once in a while.
In another life, I was a bartender and living on that schedule where you didn't even start to hang out till 3 in the morning. Now I'm in bed by 7:45 like I'm 8,000 years old.
I don't think I could do that. The only time I'm up before before the sun comes up as if I'm going hunting or something like that.
Oh, man.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
See, if I wake up and the sun is up, I assume something terrible has happened. I took a brick to the head.
What happened?
I fell out of a car. Something bad has happened because the sun's up and I'm just waking up.
Well, one of our favorite subjects is beer, and I think I would consider you one of the authorities on craft beer in Montana, because you've been doing it a long time, and you know, we get new brewers every day who are new at this. But not only, you know, we'll get into a little bit of kind of the everything you do, because there's, I mean, music is a big part of what you do, and then I mean you're involved in the beer awards, which we're going to get into first, but just so much going on: entertainment, music, you're part of the community here that does great things through business and through what you do. So like I said, that's the reason I said he's got to be too busy to come in here. But
no, absolutely not. Beer is always fun to talk about, and I'm definitely one of the old guys in the beer business. I mean, 22 years now, and when we opened up the brewery, I went to the National Brewers Convention, which is called the Craft Brewers Conference, and I think we were 1,127 was the number of brewery that we were, and now there's over 12,000 in the U.S. So pretty crazy that, I mean, we've multiplied more than 10 times at this point. So, and I think we're probably about to that point where we have plenty. I mean, there's still some small communities where you're going to see them pop up, but it's definitely a different market than it was.
And if the numbers I can find are to be trusted, here just in Montana, from 2016 to 2023, went from 68 breweries to 97.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time when they posted that, there were 4 more that were in development. And it puts you, in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it puts you in a weird position where you're a part of this community, but it's also competitive. You keep adding businesses to the ecosystem. There's the same number of dollars out there, I would assume, and so you have this weird balance where you want everybody to do well, but not too well.
Yeah.
Right.
It was easier when there was only like 10 or so to say, hey, we're all good friends. You want to share stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a different market. And, you know, that number that you mentioned, I would say for the first time in several years, you're going to see that number starting to go the other way.
It's going to contract.
Yeah. There's just a lot of folks. I mean, I get calls from other brewery owners that I've known for quite a while that are kind of singing the blues and saying, hey, are you looking to buy anything?
Right.
Or, you know, so I think COVID kind of stretched that out a little bit, because there was not only the PPP, but there was some other low interest loans that were the easiest SBA loans I've ever gotten. I mean, you go onto the computer and you just move the slider and say, can I have the money? And they sent you the money. And so a lot of breweries did that. And unfortunately, that money money's kind of starting to dry up. And so, I mean, there's already, I think, three or four breweries for sale in Montana. And unfortunately, I think you will see several of them kind of close up here in the next 18 to 24 months. And which is sad in a way, but in a way, the market kind of corrects itself, because if you're making a good product and you're doing a good job and you're serving your community well, I'm not saying the little breweries will go away, because if you're making beer and selling it across the bar retail, what you've really done is kind of bought yourself and maybe a few other people a job. But I think the days of doing kind of what we did, we were in kind of a good timing mode to do that, to start a little brewery and then move into packaging and then move into distribution in multi-states. I think that's going to be really, really difficult for new breweries to do in the future, just because there's so much competition and that shelf space is limited.
Well, that brings up another point, is that having your own brewery can mean a lot of different things.
Sure.
You could have five taps and a bar room, or you could have something like Lewis and Clark has, where you guys are running a canning line and you've got an entire industrial complex built around distribution.
Absolutely. And what I like to say is, you know, we expanded probably at the potentially the worst time, in that it was right before COVID. And yeah, I signed on the dotted line to borrow all that money. And what I'd like to say is we have a Ferrari. And we probably only need a Subaru right now, but I got the payments of a Ferrari.
Right.
And the nice thing is we have the ability to more than four times our volume.
Really?
If we ever can get there. Oh, yeah. We did, you know, a massive expansion. And so we're still, you know, we're holding our own. But across the board, when I talk to breweries across Montana, and this is something that I think the consumers don't really understand, and certainly the people that are trying to sell us things. I had some people in my office the other day. I have a pretty good administrative office that kind of filters the average salesperson, but met with these folks and they just had this perception that craft beer is exploding right now. It's like, no, that was like 3 to 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a different market right now. And so I think everybody's kind of learning how to adjust, but overall in the state of Montana, I'd say the average craft brewery, that especially those that distribute, are down probably anywhere from 10 to 15%, and that's now 2 years in a row. So you add that up, and that's a big hit.
You're fighting for shelf space if you're going to go into distributing.
Yeah, and costs have gone up, and we've all tried to increase our price a little bit, but you guys know how Montanans love their low prices. And I mean, if you were to go to any other market, I was just over in Portland last weekend, and I didn't have a pint of beer for less than $8 over there. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that used to be event pricing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were at a concert, it was an $8 yeah. beer.
Well, so. The in Montana especially, there's so many different models of breweries. Just saying your brewery, like you said, you touch on just it. But even in the different kinds of licensing, tap room, full licenses, whatever you have, there's differences there. And then there's a difference in the small town brewery, which is serving, you know, French Town, serving Manhattan, just got a new one, serving a town that size where, yeah, everybody's going to come in and have a beer. And
the
you
hometown
get all the craft beer.
Brewery. Yeah.
And then you got a boat. You got a Missoula, you got a Helena now, where there's going to reach a saturation point in the number of breweries. So there's just a myriad of different business models and what expectations have to be going into this business now.
Absolutely. I think that's the biggest thing, is trying to figure out, instead of just saying I want to open up a brewery. And I've had people call me over the years saying, hey, we're thinking about opening up a brewery. And about even 5 years ago, I started saying, hey, unless you really have a passion for making beer, if you're just doing it because you think it's a great business and you want to make money, if you're going to do that, I would rather do what Headwaters and make a craft beer bar, because you don't have all the headaches of trying to make the beer, and you just keep whatever the flavor of the week is on tap. And that's what people love, you know, because there's a lot of always new and exciting beers coming to the market. So if it was purely about making money, I always encourage people, hey, take the easier path, get yourself a license and have a craft beer bar, and you can make it very much like a tap room kind of vibe that people like to go to and take even their kids to, without spending all the time and energy and anguish of going through making your own beer.
And you'll see that model, the model difference, especially in the cities in, you know, in Bozeman and Billings. I'm really familiar with Billings. I was just looking at a couple today. You've got the craft brewery who wants to come out with full license, and they want people to stay. There's food available on site. It's a big business. And then you've got the small tap room brewery that has, maybe in a lot of cases, they're getting a little more creative with their beers. They find a beer art to it, and yet there's might be three stools in a small room.
Yeah.
And those are two different businesses, yet they're under the same label as being a brewery.
Yep.
And I think those are interesting to see when you go from room to room, like craft beer drinkers will do.
Absolutely. I think it's all about, yeah, what do you want out of it at the end of the day for those that are thinking about getting into it? I think there's less and less kind of thinking about it because the word is starting to get out that, wow, there's a lot. I mean, you just look around and even a place like Missoula or Bozeman that used to have two or three have 10 to 15
mm-hmm.
in the city. And you're like, wow, that, yeah, there's kind of, in Portland, Oregon is almost like, remember 7-Elevens when I was a kid, there used to be one on every corner. And that's kind of the way Portland is with craft beer. And so it does get to the point where how local do you want to be? That's hyper local in that I want to go to the brewery that's on the same block that I live on, that kind of thing,
right?
You know,
well, and I've seen that before, having lived around the country a little bit in a place like Grand Rapids, Michigan, when in the 90s, I think there were five, and now there's over 40.
Wow.
And I was back in August. I saw some friends there, and I was like, 40? How
do you do that?
How are we keeping them all in business? I mean, the city population didn't change. In fact, it contracted a little. Like, what are we doing there? What about the other side of the business end? Are you getting calls from giant multinational conglomerates? Because we've seen now with, I can't remember the name of the group, but like Boulevard in Kansas City and Amagong in New York and Firestone Walker in California all belong to a same, they've kind of made a cooperative.
Yep.
Are you taking those calls where somebody wants to move in and buy you out?
No, I would say there was kind of that thought, maybe hope and dream, if you will, that someone write you a big giant check and go spend the rest of your life on a beach somewhere. But those days are long gone. If you look at the people that bought into craft, the big guys, they've now sold off most of their craft. So Anheuser-Busch bought into craft in a big way and ended up selling off pretty much all of their craft beer brands at about a 90% discount from what they paid. You know, when you look at Ballast Point, that brewery out of San Diego that just exploded, you know, years ago, they sold for over $1 billion to Constellation, and now Constellation has actually spun that brand back, and I believe two of the original owners bought it back for maybe less than $50 million. For
less than a billion?
Yeah. I mean, crazy.
Take it so for the interest that you made on the sale?
Yeah, I almost look at it as kind of like the .com bubble, because I was involved in that years ago, helping to start Realtor.com, and we took it public, and the, you know, stock went crazy, and it was all about how many eyeballs are you getting, how many visitors, and your top line growth. No one was really asking the question like, hey, is this thing ever going to make any money, until 9/11 happened, and then all of a sudden the internet bubble burst and all sorts of internet companies started to go broke because people realized, wow, you know, that's a lot of money I'm investing in this company that has never made a profit really have a plan to.
Yeah.
And so just to give you an example, that was we were $138 a share at Realtor.com, over $6 billion in value, and went down to less than $1 a share within 30 days. So evaporated. Whoa. $6 billion in value. And that's when something just gets hyped. And so for a while, craft beer was getting pretty hyped because you just couldn't find enough of it. Everybody was at capacity. And so some of these big guys came in and bought some of the little guys, thinking that, well, you know, if that's the market that's growing, I want to have a piece of that market. And then unfortunately, all of that growth occurred at about the same time.
How did you make the jump? You buried the lead there. You were working in the dot-com industry, and now you run a brewery.
I was in the military and in the Air Force for a little over 8 years, born and raised in Hamilton, Montana, and then left with my high school sweetheart in back in right when I graduated high school. And after 8 years, I'd finished my degree and I wanted to be a pilot, and they didn't have any pilot slots. So I moved back to Montana, started a real estate company, and then started teaching technology, because in the military, I reprogrammed flight computers. So I had that technology background. And so then started getting a lot of realtors coming over, because that was back in the days when the MLS was a book, and the realtor would drive around with the MLS book in the front of the car and you'd look through it. Well, then it all transitioned into laptops and all that. And so then I was speaking at a conference, and someone came up and said, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this site called realtor.com. Would you come on board?" And I said, "Yeah, that sounds exciting." So I flew out every week Monday and flew back Thursday for 40 to 45 weeks a year. Did three cities a week, just going around training and doing the CNBC interviews and all that kind of stuff. So crazy. But
and it drove you to drink.
Yeah. And that's why I bought the brewery, actually, because of 9/11. Because when 9/11 happened, a lot of my buddies and other dot-coms were getting noted. They would go to work and there would be a sign on the door that said, "We're done."
Right.
There's no more paychecks. There's no nothing. We're closed. And so I thought the same thing was going to happen to realtor.com. And so I had signed a non-compete clause when I sold the real estate company, so I couldn't go back into real estate. I didn't want to move. I wanted to stay here. My kids were in school. And then I went to a poker game, and I used to go fill up growlers down at Sleeping Giant, because it's only about four blocks from my house, and went to this poker game with a growler of Sleeping Giant beer. And one of the guys at the poker game said, "Hey, did you hear those guys are, you know, going bankrupt?" And I said, "No, I hadn't heard that." He goes, "Yeah, you should buy that place." And then the wheels started turning. I thought, well, I don't have a job, maybe. So I went into the bank. Back then, it was the old Mountain West Bank, and talked to the president there. And say, he said, "Hey, if you want to take over payments, you can have it." So that's how it all started.
See, people have said that to me before, like, "You should buy that." But I always go, "I don't have any money." That would be a really interesting situation to be in. Like, "I should buy the brewery."
Yeah.
Well, so. And if folks don't live in Helena, they haven't seen the change that you've done with that. And not only that, and when we were talking about the ballast in these companies that are based on distributor of the, you know, when those big companies buy them,
yep.
It is based on distributing it throughout the country. And one of the problems with that now is that craft beer customers are so fickle. There's no brand loyalty. There's no even beer loyalty. You know, there's Budweiser drinkers and they drink Budweiser.
Yep.
Craft beer, people are looking for the next type of thing, especially now. That is really kind of accelerated. So your brewery, though, has found a way to do a group of core beers, distribute, and keep that a viable option. Is that what leads to a lot of the other ventures that you get into, to get into and then to expand the business and get into the music side of it? Or
yeah, I think it's trying to grow organically. I mean, obviously, if we would have had the capacity back when things were exploding, the reason why it was exploding for places like New Belgium and Ballast Point and Stone Brewing, they had capacity and there was so many markets that were underserved. I mean, I used to fly into Houston as part of my other job, and I would, the first thing I do when I land in a city is type in brewery in Google Maps, see if there was any. There was like one in Houston. I mean, it was like millions of people in one brewery. And so there was a lot of markets that had no craft beer. So they were just I had New York calling me saying, "Hey, could I get a truckload of kegs from you?" And I just couldn't make enough back then before we did the expansion. So it was all about who could produce during that time where it took several years for all these other locations to start opening up breweries. But you're very correct. In Montana, probably one of the worst or best, we might say, states for that, in that I talked to other brewery owners from outside of Montana that have just given up on Montana because they said, Montana just only wants Montana beer. Or they might try a couple other ones, but you're not going to get a footprint in there. And real candidly, we don't have enough people to justify, you know, spending a lot of time and energy putting salespeople every town in Montana. You're just not going to sell the volume. For me, it was all about, let's try to grow organically. So we're in all of Montana, all of Idaho, and all of Wyoming. And at this point, that's kind of where we're at. And we'll see what happens as markets shift and maybe some opportunities open up because other people couldn't, supply a market, then we certainly have a long way to grow. But now for that extra capacity, I'm actually starting to look at doing contract brewing for other smaller brewers that mm-hmm. don't have a canning line and don't want to spend $4 million on the equipment that I did. And so I think that's one way that I can produce a little bit more, make a little bit on that, they can make some, and then they don't have the initial outlay investment. So we're actually doing test batches for a brewery right now to do that.
That sounds like the distilling deals they've got going in Indiana and Kentucky.
Kind of like that.
You send a mash bill for your bourbon, they've got the facility and the distillery to make it.
Yep.
And then they make your bourbon and slap a label on it.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do and can it, and they pick it up. And then, you know, they don't have the hassle of actually producing the beer. They'll usually come in and we'll do a test batch with them and make sure we got it dialed in the way they want. But one of the nice things is we have, moving into the award side of the house, we have just a really solid record of winning awards at national and world competition. So from if you're a producer and you're looking for a place to get it done, it just gives you a little bit of assurance. It's like, hey, these guys have their quality nailed, so I feel okay having my brand produced in this facility.
Speaking of that, as we take a look around the state, the 2024 Montana State Beer Awards are coming up.
It feels like that's overdue.
The 22nd to the 24th.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, are you kidding me? We haven't done this before? This is crazy.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought I misread it when it was like the first one we're doing. And you're going to host the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, going back to competitive versus community, now you got to let all your brother-in-laws into your house.
You know, we're happy to do that. Nowadays, it truly is. We're blessed in that we have a footprint and some sustainable pull on the market, but especially with some of the large chains like Winco and Walmart and Super One and Albertsons and Safeway and that. And so it's not as it's not a dog eat dog world of competition, to be real candid. The people that we compete more with would be some of the other regional crafts that we're starting to see a little bit of price compression and competitivity with, hey, I'm going to put a $6.99 six pack out there. Can you compete with that? And so those kind of things, I think, will be more of a challenge than within the state of Montana. But it worked out. We have a beautiful facility. You know, we got 8,000 square feet in that tap room, and we got a big room called the Power Room that they can do all the judging, and we got big coolers. And so I was really blown away this week, last week actually, when they started, but how many beers have come in the door. It's pretty crazy. I've never seen so many breweries. I think they were up to 45 or 55. I think it was 55. It was more than we had members in the MBA, I remember seeing, that are putting beer into the competition, which is really, really exciting, because there's a lot of these breweries that this might be the best opportunity they have to get some exposure for their brand, because to play in those bigger competitions costs money. And if you want to go to those competitions, it costs a lot of money. But even to submit beers to get judged costs probably, I would say 3-4 times what it's going to cost to submit for the Montana Beer Awards. So I think it's a great stepping stone and a great way to identify someone that's doing a phenomenal job that we might not have heard of out of some small town in eastern Montana or whatever, that's like, wow, that's a damn good Scottish ale, or that's a damn good lager, or whatever it is, you know?
Well, I was thinking about that because there are 15 breweries competing in the Montana State Beer Awards that start with B.
Wow.
just the B's.
I'm glad I'm an L, I guess.
I found, it's funny because I was just there last summer. Branding Iron Brewing is one. It's in Eureka. You'll drive right past it. It's tiny.
I'm not going to Eureka.
It's like,
that's a long way.
You know, if you're on your way to the lake, it's up. Oh, there it goes. It's just a tiny little place. But my wife and I do the same thing you were talking about. You go into a new town, get some whiffy, and check it out on the phone. And where are the breweries? Because there's almost always one. And I saw that they were on the list. I'm like, I'm being damned. They're coming all the way down here from Eureka. I think they had, I can't remember offhand, I think it was 6 tap handles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but just built into this little barn. It's right next to a dispensary, which was weird.
Yeah. We got one of those too right now.
The parking lot was a mixed bag. I'm like, wow, it's weird. Oh, they're not going in the brewery at all. Okay.
Yeah. Or they might be coming after.
Yeah. Cottonmouth. But yeah, that was one of those things where, you know, somebody like that is going to come from Eureka. They're going to see, your outfit if they haven't yet, if they haven't been down here, and go, oh, levels to this game.
Yeah, well. True. Yeah, we're super excited to be able to host them. And for the very first time in the history of Lewis and Clark Tap Room, we will have other beers on tap that night. So we have, I think, 8 beers from all over the state, guest taps that we're putting on just on a jockey box there. And so that's exciting, too, to be able to come in and try some beers that most of the ones aren't even distributed. So it's one of those, hey, we're driving a keg over kind of thing, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
And so that'll be really fun. And we got the new arcade, the Lewis and Clarkade, opened up. And so we're going to, you know, I know Malt Europe is doing, they're the grain supplier for a lot of us. They're doing a reception in there for the brewers. And so it's going to be a really fun night. We're excited about it.
And you mentioned the taps from other breweries, but as far as beer drinkers go, because I know a lot of this is going to be kind of a closed society type thing. There's going to be judging. It's a lot of it's going to be stuff that...
Yeah, how did we miss out on the call for the that, consumer, by the way?
Yeah, Andy Shurtleff got called, the commissioner here.
Shurtleff gets in on all this stuff.
I know.
Last time I saw that guy,
he's in the loop. We're not in the loop.
He was judging barbecue.
You know, I think...
Friggin' jerk.
From what I understand, these are all BJCP certified judges. So a lot of them are coming from out of state for the competition. And if they are BJCP certified, which is just, you know, a fancy association for I actually know how to taste beer and talk about it. But they go through a course and get certified. Then they'll be up there in the power room doing all blind testing for, I think they start actually tomorrow. So Thursday, Friday, and then part of Saturday will be all the tasting and testing and judging. And then Saturday night, we'll give out the awards.
So. And the public's invited Saturday night.
Absolutely. We got 10 Years Gone, you know, one of the more popular bands in town. We always pack the place out when those guys play. So we'll be having some great live music right after the awards and enjoying not only our beers, but of course all the guest taps too.
All right, so check out the Montana Beer Awards, and then that kind of segues with the music playing there. Another Max Passions, I know this, and that's the music side of this, where you've taken a brewery and you've expanded it into having live music.
It's first a venue.
Of all.
It became a
bigger venue with the outside stage. You mentioned the arcade real quickly. One thing I found out, and if you've ever gone into a business and you've seen like an expansion drawing on a wall, sometimes those things will sit there a long time, and they're like, I don't know, someday. When Max says he's going to do something, he does it. He told me about the arcade before it was coming in, and then the arcade was there. It's like you plan these expansions, and they just happen. And I think that whole plan is a benefit for the community. The music you're bringing in is not just local bands like 10 Years Gone, who are great for this event, but you're bringing in next level stuff. And the list is pretty cool of who you brought in. How do you decide who those bands are, and then what makes you, it's kind of an investment and a gamble.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we got into live music back when we were underneath the brew house, you know, 21 years ago, 22 years ago. We didn't have much space down there. And if you remember, we had sawdust on the floors. And, you know, if you had 25 people in there, it was hard to move. I mean, it was just a tiny place, but we dedicated part of that space to a stage because I've been into live music all my life, and we played in a band a little bit. And so for us to even have, you know, a couple of guys with acoustic guitars was just a common thing. And I also went out and listened to live music, watched live music, you know, in town for years and years every weekend. And then I noticed that really it started to disappear. There was just very few places that wanted to deal with the hassle of doing live music, and it's not easy. It's not only the expense of the live music, it's the licensing that you got to deal with, ASCAP and BMI and CSAC, all these people that want money from you, because the guy with the acoustic guitar might play his own stuff, but he might also throw an Eagles tune in there,
right?
And then you're done, you know. And so I think a lot, and unfortunately, fortunately, craft beer I think helped in that regard, and that a lot of people started playing at breweries and still do. But now, unfortunately, we're starting to see a lot of those breweries looking at their expenses and saying, hey, that doesn't make sense for me anymore. I'm giving away half of my daily revenue for the ability to do this live music. And that's really where I took the stand. And it was during that COVID time of that extra loans that you can get to knock out that wall in the tap room, make a much bigger stage, put in a world-class, you know, PA system so that we could attract some of the larger band. I mean, we missed out on some bands over the years just because we didn't have a big enough stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have certain requirements, and if you can't get there, you can't get there. And so now, I mean, same thing with kind of the Ferrari and Subaru thing, in that we have this beautiful facility that at many times we have trouble getting crowds in there. We have some great nights and we pack the place out, but I'm betting on the long run that Helen is going to continue to grow and people are going to continue to understand the value of live music and be willing to part with a $5 bill to pay the band cover charge or a ticket for some of the bigger. But over the years, we've just been real fortunate to connect with some musicians and agents, booking agents, and we treat those guys so well, the bands that come in, that it's almost like they become really good friends. And so they're looking forward to coming back and hanging out, because guess what we do after we close? Well, we have fun. We play shuffleboard. We drink beer. We make pizzas. We, you know, I mean, if you can be one of the bright spots on the tour of these folks,
makes a huge difference.
Yeah, they're looking forward to that, and they're texting me, the lead singers of the band, like, "Hey, we're coming in. Can't we see you on the schedule?" And so that's really cool. The challenge has been, once we stepped up to that larger band level, is, it's very, in Montana is very much controlled by now kind of one entity, which is Logjam and Live Nation, that purchased a good chunk of Logjam. So you have Kettle House Amphitheater, the Wilma, you have the Elm. So all of these are now controlled by one entity. So it's tough to get some of the bigger bands if you can't show that there's more spots that you can play here. So this will be the first time I've spoken about this, but we just signed a deal with Sean Lynch over at the Pub Station, 1111 Presents. He does most of the live music in Billings. And so now, and he needed another spot so that when he's booking bands that aren't Live Nation are going to go on that circle.
He's got multiple
to play
stages.
In Billings, he can at least give one in Helena. And right. We don't really impact each other too much from a ticket cannibalization mode. And
so Montana is not an island anymore. These guys can come in and have multiple shows.
Yeah, it's a big state, so they don't want to play one gig and then drive all the way across the state to Washington or you know, back to Salt Lake or wherever. So that's exciting. He's already got some, and he's already over the years brought in some people like Core Blund and Miles Kennedy, who's, you know, obviously with Alter Bridge and Slash's band, and I mean some pretty big acts that we've had in the tap room already, and I see that continuing to grow, especially this summer now that we've expanded that outdoor patio area and a lot more grass, and we can bring in a stage and put there. Now we can get 1,000 to 1,500. Well, now you're talking a whole nother level of bands that we can, it makes sense for them, because we can make enough money for them on a ticket sales standpoint for them to come to Helena.
It's also a variety of music. It's not a pigeonholed music scene there, and I always tell people, if there's ever a band that you've not heard of at Lewis and Clark Brewing, go there, because people trust you now on the quality of music. When you're bringing in guys like Ward Davis and you're bringing in Cody Canada, that's one thing. Yeah. You bring in like a Hogslop string band, you bring in these bands that are diverse, and the quality level is just so good that you can kind of trust the headliner is going to be awesome.
Yeah, if we're charging for it, you're going to enjoy it. I don't care what genre you're into. We have now gone back to Thursdays is free music, unless it's a big ticketed event, which sometimes falls on a Thursday. Being kind of, I guess I would say, a B or a C market in Montana, it's hard to get the best acts on Friday and Saturday because they can make double the money in Billings or Missoula.
Right.
But if we can get them on a Wednesday or a Thursday or even a Tuesday, and they're a big act, people are willing to pay, and it just kind of fills in their schedule a little bit. But yeah, it's been really gratifying to meet these people and develop these relationships and really start to see more and more. We have so much talent in Helena, it blows me away. I mean, I bet there's a good 15 or 20 bands here in town that we rotate through on a regular basis. Some of them have members that are in three other bands, you mm-hmm. know, so they go back and forth. But I'm continually blown away. I mean, Goldie Box, for example, they're probably one of the bands locally that is on the rise, in that they just pack the place out. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had them right before New Year's, and we had them right around Halloween, and you just had a hard time moving in the place. It was sold out. So it's really cool to see that more and more people are saying, hey, you know what? I do have some talent, and I can share that talent. And so it's really nice to be able to offer that here in Helena.
There's a string that's connecting all of this stuff, whether you're talking about making the jump from real estate, from the military to real estate to brewing, building out during COVID, all of that stuff. There's not a lot of chicken shit to your game. How do you balance that? Because you seem, it sounds like you're chasing the things that you are honestly passionate about and you really like, but I really like a lot of things that would not make me any money and would in fact bankrupt me.
Yep.
How do you balance that?
You know, I guess I've always been very risk tolerant, and but I can tell you that, you know, now that I'm in my mid 50s and starting to think more about, man, I would like to go fishing more or go golfing more than work 60, 70 hours a week, which is what I do. And my wife is now saying, hey, you know what? I bought into all those dreams, but you've got to stop dreaming and let things catch up a little bit. And so, I mean, there's always those opportunities that are out there. I'm usually thinking 3 to 5 years in advance, and some of that stuff probably isn't going to come true. But it is one of those things that I fully believe. I work hard, and if you take the risk, and that's where the payout is going to be at the end. It's not here yet. I've still got some really big loan payments to make, but someday it's going to be paid off in 6 years and 10 months, actually. Not that I'm counting or anything.
You got to know the business side of this too, right?
Yeah, how many days, hours, and minutes?
Yeah, but it is fun to be able to do something that you're actually really passionate about. And when I give a tour of the brewery, I've had people at the end of the tour say, wow, you're just so passionate about this. And I'm not pretending. I enjoy right. it.
Well, you can't.
Yeah.
I would think, and it's something like this, and, you know, I've worked in radio for a long time, and authenticity means so much to so many different businesses. But if you want to work in entertainment and you want to be welcoming people in, you're the host. If that authenticity piece isn't there and it's just a license to print money and you could be selling insurance or making shoes or anything else, you're not a good hang and people won't come back.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's got to be a bit, you know, the business side of it, you knowing the number of payments to get to where you need to be.
I think when you sign those loans, I mean, you know.
It's easy to say, I want to start a bar. I love beer. I love the arcade. I want to play music. It's easy to say all that. You got to know the business side. You got to have the time and commitment to doing that as well, you know. But it's probably a lot easier to go do the books at a brewery than it is at an insurance agency. So yeah. It's a little bit more fun to walk in those doors and do the kind of down to the grindstone type stuff.
You know, and that when you say insurance kind of brings up, you'd never know what's going to happen to you that is going to affect the way you have to make decisions. And to give you an example, and this is one of those things that I think the false perception I get from people sometimes is that I'll see them in the tap room. They'll say, wow, you guys must just be killing it here. The other night when Hell's Bells was here, it was packed. I said, yeah, but you didn't come last Thursday when Boot Juice was here, which was a great band, and there was only about 15 people. Mm. And so, you know, yeah, we're excited about the future, but we've got a long way to go to get there. And to give you an example, my insurance went from $42,000 a year I pay for insurance for everything in that complex, and we had a claim because we had a tank implode, and we also had a water line freeze. So first claims in years, and then the insurance company dropped us this last year in October. They said, oh, we're just not interested. You'll need to find another insurance company. We found one, and it went from $42,000 to $88,000 a year. It's the best price I could get now.
More than double.
And you think, wow, that's like a well-paid employee I could have hired.
Right.
So there's a lot of those kind of expenses. I mean, my power bill last month was the most expensive I've ever seen, $14,000 for my power bill. Luckily, we're putting a bunch of solar on the roof this next year that's going to help. But there's things like that that people have a hard time understanding just how big the machine is and how much it costs to actually operate. So we still got a deep hole to dig out of, but we're excited about the future.
What about your crew? Because that's, I say this as a veteran of working in music venues and working in bars and more than my fair share as a customer on the other side, where you come in and the people I don't care what's on tap. I don't care what you've got on the menu. I don't care how cool the aesthetic is. If the people suck that work there, you know, they actually make the place, the human beings. It's, you know, especially in a community as small as Helena, you know, word gets out fast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, bad gas travels fast and all
so
that.
So critical to have a good team. And we kind of have two separate teams because, you know, the weird alcohol laws in Montana, we have two entities. We have a tap room and then we have the brewery, and they have different employees, but they all know each other and they all help each other and all that kind of stuff. But you can have a really good production team, so brewers, packagers, cellar workers, lab people that are putting out a world-class product that's winning medals year over year over year. And then you can put that on tap in your tap room, and someone can walk in and have a bad experience from one bartender that's in a bad mood, and you have shitty beer.
Yep.
I mean, that's what
people... They blast it all over social media and everybody reads it.
And so I have those meetings with my retail staff, and it's a little more of a challenge on the retail side. We have some full-time people that are amazing, and we have a lot of great part-time people, but you'd end up getting a turnover in that business. It's not necessarily a career choice, right? For most people, it's kind of a part-time gig. I work here, and then I do a couple of nights, I sling beers, you know? And so I reinforce to them how important it is that you are the face of the brewery when someone walks in. Yep. They've never been here before. You are what they're going to judge, what they're going to taste out of that glass by. So a smile and a greeting and being, it's so important. But I do have to go back and say, I really do have really good people that care about quality from the point that the grain comes in the door till the can or glass or keg goes out. They really do care. And if there's a problem, they're unbelievably passionate about trying to figure out what that problem is.
How competitive is that? Like when you're looking for brewmasters, especially, you know, when you're talking about 90 plus breweries in the state of Montana, there are lots of brewmasters, and I put that in quotes, like Dr. Evil, out there. They're not all necessarily the same. They don't have the same skill set, the same experience. How competitive is that market?
It was more so, I would say, 3 to 5 years ago. Now it's, you know, because there's actually some breweries that have laid off some folks, that it's not as bad. But I think it's the culture that really sells people on the job. I mean, I've had to increase everybody's pay this last year because everybody's pay everywhere else went up. And you can't expect a guy that knows how to run a complex piece of machinery like a canning line or knows how to brew beer, which is, you know, got a lot of art and science into it, to make less than the guy that's checking people out at Home Depot. You just can't do that. Even if they love the job and they love being able to drink beer for free with their beer credit, and they love the live music that you let them come to for free, at the end of the day, they got a family that's saying, hey,
I'd love to pay the mortgage.
Things are getting tight.
Yeah.
And so I think the really a great thing, though, is as long as you can keep them, you know, in that line of compensation that is a fair compensation, they all understand where I am as a business right now. I've been very transparent and candid with them about what the bills look like and what the goal is. And I know that some of them might not make it to that goal, but those that do, I've committed to them. I'm going to remember that. And when we do take trips to Europe or something as a fun thing that's a legitimate business expense to go check out really cool beers in Belgium or something.
I've heard Munich knows a thing or two.
Those people are going to be rewarded for that. So I appreciate that.
You know, I feel like we've started off talking about beer. We're talking a lot basically about business. You can fill in the blank on the product or the service you're providing. But part of that goes into watching kind of the intricacies and the fine points. One of those that I see is when you go to the brewery, you listen to some music. And I've heard this from the musicians who play there as well. You'll notice like the sound system is great, and whoever you got running the sound there, I've heard him complimented from numerous bands. And those are the type of people, not only just the people to find that guy, but the fine point of caring about finding that guy and giving him the equipment to do what he does, because the sound quality in there is fantastic.
Well, thank you.
It's
definitely been a challenge. I mean, when we first moved in there, and you know, we were so strapped with cash when we had the grand opening, we had the Clintons play. They didn't charge me a dime because they knew I was strapped for cash. And that was when the Clintons were making probably $5,000, you know, to $3,500 to $5,000 a night to play a show. But I mean, I was so strapped trying to get into there that we didn't have any money for sound treatment, or we had some kind of cheesy old PA that we had. And it's really nice to actually dedicate money. And what I like to do is, like you mentioned, the sound guys, we have Dave, Lenny, and Marcus, and Dave kind of manages the whole process. But I say, hey, Dave, what's the next thing you need to make this sound better? You know what? We need some 4-inch sound panels for these frequencies, and I've done the readings, and this would really help out. Okay, how much does that cost? Okay, that's $1,200. All right, well, let's make sure that by April 1st, we've dedicated that kind of money so that you can... So it's a matter of not only just saying, hey, here's what you have, do a good job with it. It's also saying, what do you need to do your job better? And I think that's always an important part. And they respect the fact that sometimes the money's not there, but let's make a list. Let's make a wish list of what we want in the coffers in order to get those things that are going to make things better here. Same with the game room, with Cody running the game room and all those pinball machines and arcade machines. It is a constant maintenance battle with that kind of stuff because they get played a lot.
And they're aged. A lot of those are...
Absolutely. I mean, you got to open those things up and you got to clean them. I look at some of those pinball machines, and pinball, by the way, could have its own podcast. Pinball, to me right now, is like craft beer was 10 years ago. It is absolutely on fire. I mean, I would have never have dreamt that when we put a few pinball machines in that game room, that they would be the thing that is driving all of the revenue and traffic in
there.
It's
not Centipede.
It's not Pac-Man. No. It's not... Street Fighter. It's not Space Invaders. I mean, it's cool to have those.
Yeah.
And you'll get a person or two come in and play those, but there are pinball people that come in 4 or 5 days a week and play pinball and drop money and drink beer and eat some pizza and have a good time. And that's a genre that I wasn't as exposed to. I mean, I've had my own pinball machine for several years. I just didn't realize that the world has woken up to it. And now I was just in Portland this last weekend and went to a couple of pinball bars where, I mean, it is pinball and bar, but it is 90% pinball with, like we just recently done, people that play pinball like to see where they rank amongst other people.
Oh, yeah. What's the point otherwise? Yeah.
And so we have a screen up that shows locally, statewide, and we do tournaments once a month. And starting next month, there'll be IFPA tournaments, which are the International Flipper Pinball Association.
Really?
So they like to accumulate points because then we'll have a state championship and then they can go to the regionals or the Nationals. It's crazy.
They're having tournaments in at Odd Pitch in Missoula as
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really, really a crazy connection between craft beer and pinball that's really blown up, which is really, really fun. It's another one of those passions, like live music and beer that and golf with the golf simulator that, you know, selfishly I love to do. So if I can do that and create a business out of it, I was in there with one of my guys, Heath, playing Jaws pinball last night at probably 12:30 this morning before I went home to get in the hot tub. So I got to get a daily juice of pinball. It's fun.
That's great.
Now, you sound like you never stop working with everything that you've got going on, but we still...
I work, but I have some fun along the way.
We still live here in Montana. What do you do when you unplug? Where do you go? What do you do?
Hawaii. I'm going there. I'm going there Monday, actually, for about 2 weeks. The wife and I usually leave the last part of February, first part of March. That's our anniversary.
That's a good time to not be here.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we just kind of go out. I mean, I still take my computer and I answer some emails and stuff, but I try to unplug a little bit.
Well, Hawaii is a...
In the summertime, I love Montana in the summer. I could do without January, February, and probably March someday because I'm just not super into the whole outdoor snow sport mode. But I love the summers here, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else for the summers. They're just so beautiful.
I think it's important to also bring up the fact that Max is also involved in this community in a way that goes outside of just your business. And a couple of those things I've noticed recently. You help out with Westmont with a music event out there, which I think is really important to do things like that. And it just really does underline how important your business is back to the community. You also, or I saw on your social media, exploring the Alive at Five concert series, which is a downtown concert series here involving local bands and some state bands and bands traveling through and taking on that and kind of spearheading the effort to keep that going.
Yeah, I think that's one of those kind of staples of the community that if there's any way I can make it happen. I mean, we catered it last year, but that just means we sold beer there and then we actually kicked back some of that money to downtown Helena. And it honestly didn't make us any money last year. Matter of fact, we kind of underestimated the labor cost of even just doing the beer part of it. So when they approached me about, hey, could you take the whole thing over? I started looking at the numbers in a spreadsheet and was like, wow, this is a $75,000 to $100,000 commitment. I just can't do that. I wish my business was at a point 6 years and 10 months from now where I had those loans paid off and I could say, oh, well, I could just be altruistic and do this for the community. I just can't. So we posted out there and we've just asked other businesses, hey, can someone else help us save Alive at Five? Because we can do it, but we need at least a couple of partners to make sure that it's not going to be such an anchor on us that we can't survive. And so I'm excited. We've gotten quite a bit of feedback. As a matter of fact, I was answering an email when you walked out, Scott, from someone that, you know, at an architectural firm that's interested in helping out. So we're sending out sponsorship documents and we're hoping that'll work. It's exciting for us because I think that'll even allow us to get some live music. I'll probably try to book Wednesday at Alive at Five and Thursday at the brewery and give them two gigs that way and both of them be free to the public. And that way we can continue that staple. What we'll probably end up doing in order to make it work logistically is do half of them downtown and half of them in our patio because we have the infrastructure and everything there. And the cost of doing the porta-johns and the stage and the PA, and I don't have that when I'm in my backyard. So we can do that back and forth and I think create some nice synergy and I'm excited about it.
Bringing Igor and the Red Elvises back.
Yeah, they're coming back.
Are they?
Yeah. Yep.
I love those guys.
I think they're coming back in the first part of July.
That band is just fun. That's all they are.
Yeah, it's really cool to have a number of bands like that. And like you mentioned, completely different genres. I mean, we got blues like with Michael Charles and Too Slim and the Tail Draggers. Those folks that come back about once a year and you don't know where they're going to fit in. They got to be. And I always tell bands and that have become friends, I said, hey, I want you to come back anytime you can come back, but I can't be the reason you're coming back. I can't afford to be the reason. So once you have a tour and you're going to be in Salt Lake or you're going to be in Spokane or you're going to be in Billings, then absolutely I can help in that regard. Mm-hmm. But if you're what they call the anchor tenant or the anchor buyer, it's just really tough to make that work financially.
Sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, it sounds like if you want to find out what Max is all about, you got about 6 years, 10 months to get yourself down to Lewis and Clark Brewing.
I'm sure it'll be longer than that. I just won't be working so late.
I'm saying, man, I hope
you
for that
too. You won't catch him there quite as often.
I'll be playing more pinball.
I'll tell you what, I hope that for you, man, because it's fun talking to people like you that have got so many irons in the fire, are working for the community and have built something. If you're traveling through Helena, go down Montana Avenue, check out the facility, you're going to be amazed at the size of the joint.
Check out the beer awards.
And back at the community thing real quick, one thing that blew me away and one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about continuing to connect is when we first started to get up to 10,000 barrels, this is 6 years ago or something, and we were going to lose our tap room because the law hadn't changed. So if you go over 10,000, couldn't have a tap room. And so we needed to get a license. In order to get a license, we had to get what's called a PUD or a CUP, a conditional use permit from the city. Well, by that point, we had local musicians coming in. We had local comedians coming in upstairs every week. We have an art gallery where we don't charge any commission or any rent for the artists that produce stuff into that gallery. And when we had the public hearing up at the city, there was a line of people. I didn't even ask people to be there, but there was 70, 80 people in line to testify on our behalf. And I mean, I got emotional. I was like, wow, that is really cool. Well, that's what when you do the right thing, people pay you back in that regard. And we got that CUP approved. And it just told me, hey, you know what? Being connected to that many different assets and that many different people within the community is a really good thing for business.
Well, that support isn't unearned at all. You've certainly earned that. And once again, the Montana State Beer Awards coming up on February 22nd through the 24th. This is a great excuse to go check out the brewery if you haven't been there. Max, thank you so much for taking the time out of what is obviously an insanely busy schedule.
You bet. My pleasure, guys. It was fun.
Once you get through this,
let's do it again sometime.
Enjoy Hawaii, bud.
All right, we'll do. Cheers.
Thanks for checking out the latest episode. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to this wherever you found it, and we will be back next week.